www.ReachForTheStars.org.
I wanna be a tree, wanna make my home with the birds and the bees and the squirrels. They can count on me when I grow up to be a tree. I'll let my joints get stiff, put my feet in the ground, take the winters off and settle down. Keep my clothes till they turn brown. When I grow up, I'm gonna settle down.
John Gorka in the background there as we start the Sustainable Living Program today with John Butts. John, how are you?
Pretty good, Rob. How are you doing?
I'm good.
You have a nice weekend?
It was very nice, yes.
Did you stay out of the heat?
I tried to get into the heat as much as possible. We had the big volunteer banquet yesterday. That was nice.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah. So it was good.
Yeah. I was up on a roof again.
Oh, so you went right into it.
Yeah. And I it's about 5 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm out in the garden. I got some dandelions planted, and we sell them. And, yeah, I was down there digging around, and the soil's real hot, and it's real dry. 2 weeks ago, I was complaining about too much rain, and for about 2 weeks, we haven't had any rain. And of course, everything's real dry, and I've kind of ripped the irrigation out of the farm. But anyhow, it was hot, and, you know, it's going to get hotter, it looks like. I was trying to think of if, you know, I know what, 2014, 15, and 16, they all broke yearly records for global high time temperatures, and I tried to find something on 2017. I guess the verdict isn't in, but I'm sure that, you know, we were pretty close to it. 2 weeks ago on the program, we were talking about transportation, and you know, it's just kind of like how does this all kind of tie in as to how can we have you know, a transportation system here in Florida do what we're supposed to do. You know, greenhouse gases are the problem. It's, you know, people can blame everything else, but the extraction of fossil fuel and burning fossil fuel is a very serious problem. And the reality, our homes, solar has just gotten so cheap that there is a way there that we can live like that. But the driving part of it, you know, in our culture, it's really, really problematic. Today, We're going to talk about trees and hurricanes, and the trees are a carbon sink. You know, they're very important, and it's just like the whole climate change thing is more than one thing. And you know, I've been reading about the Amazon forest. And, you know, like, not only are we cutting it down, it's drying out, you know. So, there, you know, we really, really haven't, because that's a carbon sink, too, all the trees in the rainforest. And at noon, Sean's going to be talking about the coral reefs. Well, it's more than the coral reefs. It's the whole acidification of our oceans. And we can go on, and, you know, I could probably talk about these things. But as they say, we really need to kind of face the facts and at least somehow curtail it, because it's like the bathtub. We're filling up the bathtub. The water's dribbling out the back, but it's coming up on the top. And anything we can do to quit putting more carbon in the atmosphere or more greenhouse gases in the atmosphere is going to be very helpful. It's easier to do it on the front end than on the back end to make the hole bigger in the bathtub. It's just not going to be that way. So then... You know, kind of our topic today was kind of related to hurricane damage and storms, and it's, you know, it's kind of all related. And I got a tip about our extension service doing a program on hurricanes and trees, and I got to go to a talk last Wednesday here in Hillsborough County on hurricanes and trees. And today, our guest will be talking about that, and our main guest is Robert Northrup, and he's Hillsborough County's University of Florida IFAS Urban Forester. Hey, welcome, Robert. Great to have you.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here.
Good to have you. And also on the line, we have our dear friend up there in Sumpter County, Wendell Martinovic. He's a permaculturist and an arborist and a former extension agent himself. You there, Wendell?
You know, Wendell tried to call in, and we dropped him. Frank was out doing something else. As soon as Frank calls back,
okay,
or as soon as Frank comes back in.
I'm sorry, and that's my own fault. I got busy in the this, and I just didn't get around to call. And also, the co-host is here, Wonder Woman Tanya Viktovic. Great to have you back, Tanya. How you doing?
Every day that I get to come in is a wonderful day. So
have you been doing a lot of outdoor activities, or?
You know, with the... Oh, thank you. I'm sorry. It was off. Yes, it's wonderful to be here. Tons of outdoor activities. We've been planting a bunch, and you know, with the kids, I have three little ones, so we're outside constantly. So, what's up? Yeah, no, we're definitely outside all the time. It's been wonderful. It's been a very busy summer. We went up to the springs last week. So I forget which springs. It wasn't Silver, but we've been frequenting a bunch of the different springs this in the past couple of years. So that's been wonderful too. Mm-hmm.
The beautiful asset here in Florida. They're kind of being endangered also. And yeah. Okay, I think Wendell, are you there?
Yeah, Wendell Martinkovic is mm-hmm. on the phone, and Wendell. Welcome back to WMNF.
You there, Wendell?
Good morning. Great to be here.
Hey, I'm sorry. I forgot all about you.
Yeah, I think John asked me to be on the show today because I'm a certified tree hugger.
Well, you certainly are, and you are one of the organizers of, again, this year's Permaculture Convergence coming up, and I guess, you know, it's kind of early, but, you know, I'm really kind of excited about that. Is if anything kind of goes along with the Sustainable Living Show, it's permaculture, and I'm so honored to have you as a friend and a mentor. You come down on Wednesday and kind of help me out on the farm, and we sit and we talk about this closing the loop, and we've been talking about this for quite a while, but anyhow, talk just a little bit about the conference before we go in and start talking about trees.
Okay, the 6th annual Florida Permaculture Convergence will be held on November 29th through December 2nd, again over at the Kashi Ashram in Sebastian. John Butts has agreed to be a presenter this year for the first time. We're really excited. And like John said, the theme is closing the loop. Your practical ways that we can be more sustainable in our lives. Jungle J Hardman will be there. It's just a great event. And if you want more information, you go to flpermacultureconvergence.org. And what I like about the permaculture, the permies they call themselves, is that they, when they get together, they have convergences, not just conferences. So hopefully we're trying to really affect some change.
Great. And Wendell, your house is covered up with live oak trees, and I think, well, we'll talk to our main guest today, but it's a beautiful setting, and it really, you're really hardcore, you know, there for the longest time, probably maybe 10 or 15 years, we didn't use air conditioning in our home. And about 3 years ago, we had a little party and we turned on the air conditioner, and my dear wife's kept that air conditioner on. But you guys are still living up there without AC. How do you do
that? That's correct. Nancy designed our house totally with passive solar, wraparound screen porches, ventilation through the roof with a clear story, awning windows, and it's just it stays pretty nice and cool in here. The problem is the humidity.
Really? Really? Well, that was a problem we had. We'd never had any fluorescent lights at work. I don't think humidity and fluorescent lights go together. But anyhow, okay, Robert Northrup, you have another tree seminar coming up on Wednesday there at the Garden Club here in Tampa. Maybe we ought to talk about that first.
Yeah, what we've got is a program on trees and hurricanes.
Okay.
And basically what I'm trying to do is to help residents of the Tampa Bay area have a little bit more knowledge about trees, how to take care of them, what to look for in terms of what might be possibly be dangerous in terms of high winds, and so that they can make better choices about which trees to plant, which trees to keep, and how to take care of them relative to protecting themselves, their homes, and the trees themselves during high wind events, including hurricanes. And of course, we're in the hurricane season right now. But that's at the Garden Club, and they have graciously partnered with us and, you know, provided the facility.
Cool, cool. And you as the urban forester here in Hillsborough County, maybe some of your other concerns about trees. You kind of talk about the diversity of trees here in the Tampa Bay region.
Yeah, well, one of the, and it goes back to the idea of having a resistant urban forest, if you will, relative to hurricanes. Okay, and not just hurricanes. I mean, we have thunderstorms, too. And thunderstorms are, in small, isolated pockets, can have winds as strong and dump as much rain as a hurricane does. Mm-hmm. It's just not quite as widespread. And because we get lots of hurricanes, lots of thunderstorms, not lots of hurricanes. That's me knocking on wood. So the urban forest, and that's an interesting term, John, because lots of people have a hard time relating to what does an urban forest mean? And of course, here in the whole Tampa Bay region, we now live in a metropolitan region. The cities themselves are no longer isolated. They have spread out to encompass almost the entire Tampa Bay watershed. So really the entire Tampa Bay watershed at this point truly can be considered urban, even though we can find pockets of farms and pockets of what looks like remnants of forests and things. But that's the urban forest. Well, the urban forest provides all kinds of really important benefits. You know, it reduces air pollutants that cause disease, the EPA tracts, right? Carbon sequestration, carbon storage, does a tremendous amount of work in terms of controlling stormwater flows, all right? You know, putting hydrology back into a natural type of flow pattern and cleaning the water. So the urban forest has a great deal of value to us, but in and of itself as a natural heritage for people in the future, but also in terms of all the animals, everything from microscopic to multicellular, you know, mammals that depend upon that structure and that composition for their very livelihood and existence. So when we talk about diversity of trees within the urban forest, we're talking about the ability to support all of those things continuing to happen over time, and relative to hurricanes or strong winds or thunderstorms and things like that, the greater the diversity of trees, particularly native trees, that can withstand these types of storms, ensures that while some trees may fall and die and become dysfunctional, if you will, during these big events, that some of the others will remain. And so that the totalness of the urban forest won't be lost, maybe just a few of the pieces. And so that's why diversity, particularly in terms of the trees, is really, really important. That's one of the reasons in terms of hurricanes. We could talk about, you could talk about birds, insects, mammals, people. We can talk about the diversity of trees as being important from lots of different perspectives.
Well, you know, I think that the thing is trees can be an asset or a liability in storms. And, you know, I'm not going to say much more, but as a sailor, I was always surprised by how, you know, you couldn't sail around these trees around Fort DeSoto because of the wind. And you said, well, look at the winds here. But any interaction of those trees was a diversion. It's a windbreak. And I think we don't even consider that sometimes. But a lot of times what really actually protect us in a hurricane are trees.
We haven't shown it. We haven't proven it, you know, through a scientific method, right? We haven't gone through the whole scientific process of developing those types of models in hurricane situations. Mm-hmm. obviously, we have a long history of planting windbreaks out in the plains, protecting our soil. Obviously, it breaks the wind. We know that it changes wind direction, wind speed. I know that my colleague, Mary Duryea, who did a tremendous amount of work for 10 years tracking hurricanes and trees all through Florida, told me just anecdotally one day that she had seen this house surrounded by live oaks, which, by the way, along with cabbage palms, are the most resistant to wind damage of all the trees in Florida. And she began to think that she thought those trees were protecting that house because they had lost all their leaves, right? Mm-hmm. And this was a major hurricane, and yet the roof of the house was just fine. There was nothing wrong with that house at all. It had taken the whole brunt of this storm up in the panhandle, and it was fine. But we haven't been able to show that directly. And, of course, what we have found, as you noticed, along the lower end of DeSoto with the trees and everything, is that when trees are planted in groups, that's when they're the most sturdy, and that's also when they can have the most effect on wind speed, and break wind speed up. And we know this from studying forests that damage from hurricanes and big storms tends to be on the outer edge of a forest where they take the full brunt of the wind. And obviously they are buffering the inside of the forest because we don't see the damage to any great degree.
Yeah, because the trees obviously get hit with the wind on the outside. But then I was reading also is that when you plant them so close together as in a forest, that they have the interlocking root systems that kind of protect each other from falling over, right?
Yeah, so trees often can actually graft roots.
Oh.
Okay, and so they can actually be grafted onto one another. The big thing, Tanya, in the forest is what we most of us don't see in the urban areas, is that one third of the tree is underground. And that one third of the tree that is underground is the anchoring system.
Mm-hmm.
And so what the biggest problem we have in urban areas in terms of stability of trees, okay, is that they don't have enough space to actually anchor themselves. We have done some studies, meaning people in my profession have done some studies, and we have begun to recognize that a tree, an open-grown tree, actually wants to put roots out about three times the distance of the canopy. And that's what the tree wants in terms of stability. The other thing to remember, too, about trees in urban areas is that, you know, trees have been around for over 370 million years. They've been very successful. Right?
Without us.
Without us, right? So they're not dependent upon us. That's most certainly true. But the fact of the matter is that in general, with the exception of savannas, trees grow in groups, and we call those groups forests. And those forests have an entirely different solar radiation, humidity levels, fluctuations in highs and low temperatures, different moisture levels in the soil than when you step out of them.
You know, and when you brought up a point that you said that trees, you know, they want to grow and start little and develop that root system. What I see, you know, especially like where I live right now, is they're cutting down a lot of these really large trees that are already established and have been there hundreds of years and planting, you know, 15, 25 gallon trees, you know, plants that are probably 15 feet high and saying, well, they're replacing them with a decent sized tree. But isn't it harder for those trees that have been root bound for, you know, however many years to get them that size to actually develop the roots needed in order to become stable?
Well, that's an interesting question. And actually, it's one that my colleague Andrew Kozer and I are starting to look at relative to urban forests, and meaning inside cities, really. Is how much of, like, let's say Tampa, which we've studied extensively, how much of Tampa's urban forest is actually a residual of what was there, you know, from the past, from mm-hmm. even 40 years ago or 30 years ago. I've only been around 14 years, so I can't attest to what it appeared to be back then. But how much of it is a remnant? And So it is a concern, you know, that when we take down these bigger trees. So we know these bigger trees, particularly the live oaks, which are the ones that tend to really live long and prosper in urban areas like this, have tremendously big crowns and canopies, if you will, and leaves. And it's the leaves, most people don't realize, but it's the leaves that are cleaning the pollutants out of the air. It's the leaves that are driving the sequestration of carbon. So these big trees are very, very important in terms of providing the benefits to human society in urban areas. It's also the leaves that intercept the rainfall that affect and improve our water quality. So when we plant the younger trees, of course, we're taking the chance that by replacing them with younger trees, that these trees are going to live that long. Now, some of these trees have been 150, 200 years old. That's a long time to wait. I do have to say, I have to give a plug to the city of Tampa, who are doing a really great job in terms of the urban forest.
They are.
Yeah, they really are. They're one of the leaders in all of the country, truly. And I get this all the time that I travel around and give talks. One of the things they're working on right now that they're going to do is, instead of replacing trees when they're taken down, these big trees on the diameter, like you plant so many trees based upon diameter, they are looking at saying, okay, you're going to take down so many trees, a big tree or whatever, you have to replace the canopy within 5 years. The canopy has to come back within 5 years because it's the canopy that's driving all the benefits to society. So it's not a matter of just putting a few trees in to replace. It's actually putting back the functionality of the urban forest, the ecosystem function.
Yeah, no, that's wonderful because, I was reading about it, and, yeah, the canopy is so important as far as, like, lowering the temperature, and I was reading about the glare, reducing the glare and, reducing your cooling costs too, you know, so that canopy is important as far as covering the entire top of the city and all of our houses and streets. And
yeah, it does a lot. You know, we're able to, and the city, again, I can't overstate, you know, this part of what the city is doing. I mean, they have conducted 3 different very intensive analyses of the urban forest in the last 12 years. For instance, you mentioned just in shading for individual residential homes. Now, this is not everything, right? Because this is just what we were able to do. You know, this right there, just in dollars, it's a $7 million reduction in energy costs. But that's a reduction in energy production. That's a reduction in the burning of coal to produce that energy. That's a reduction in the release of greenhouse gases also. So all of these things, like your friend with permaculture, you know, we need to look at all these things from an ecological sense, that these things are tied together, and some of the things that are being done are really important for many, many different reasons. And this is the beautiful part of what the city of Tampa is doing. They are taking an ecological approach to their urban forest. It's no longer that trees are just an amenity.
Cool. Rob?
Well, you're listening to the Sustainable Living Program on WMNF in Tampa. That's Robert Northrup, who's with the County Extension Service. Robert, are you an arborist? Is that your...
I'm a forest ecologist.
Forest ecologist, okay. Mm-hmm. And then on the phone with us, Wendell Martinkovic is a certified tree hugger, he says. And we're going to talk for this entire show about what to look for at your trees as we are in the middle of hurricane season, to figure out which trees are going to be safe during hurricanes, which kind of trees to plant that are going to withstand lots of wind, and which trees might be most breakable during a hurricane. We know that we lost a lot of electricity. Power lines went down during the last hurricane last year, and we want to try to avoid that as much as we can. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. And Tanya Vitek is here, and John Butts is here, and this is the Sustainable Living Program. Let me just clear something up. Robert, the event that you're sponsoring or you're hosting at the Garden Club, which Garden Club are you going to be at?
Okay, so we're talking about the Tampa Federation of Garden Clubs at 2629 Bayshore Boulevard.
Okay.
Okay, and that's July 25th from 10 to 12. That's a Wednesday. That's next Wednesday, right? A week from Wednesday.
All right. And Wendell Martinkovic, do you want to add anything to what you've heard Robert say so far?
Oh, yes. I wanted to just say that there's a publication that I was looking at that Mary Doria, that Rob mentioned, his colleague, had put together on selecting tropical and subtropical tree species for wind resistance from the university. And I think that kind of goes to the next question of, well, what trees are best to withstand hurricanes?
Yeah, Robert,
so,
I want...
I'll pass it back to Robert on that, because I know he's more knowledgeable than me on that, but it's really neat to see that the university has done the research. And so if you're going to plant those new trees in Tampa, what should we plant?
All right, so Robert, let me ask you a question. A live oak, you said, is the strongest tree, can last during a hurricane. Some live up to 250 years, is that right?
Even older in good condition.
How do I know my oak is a live oak? For folks that have just moved here, when you're looking at your oak tree, how do you tell whether or not it's a live oak?
And that's actually a really good question, because here in the Tampa Bay area, we have another tree that looks very similar to most people. It's called the laurel oak. And their leaves, which is the way most people can tell one tree from another, are also very similar. Two things. If you take a laurel oak leaf and you take it from the tip to the base, you can roll it and it won't break. Okay, it's supple, right? If you take a live oak leaf, especially once we get into the summer, and you take it and you bend it, lots of times it will crack. The other thing is the live oak leaf is a little bit more rounded. It's got a shinier, darker green upper side. And if you turn it over, it's like a little boat. You can see that you could actually float it in the water. The other way, of course, is we all get on the internet anymore, and you can just say live oak, laurel oak, and I promise you that images will pop up that will show you the difference between the leaves very readily.
Are live oaks more gnarly?
Are live oaks more gnarly?
They have curved trunks and they do kind of like amazing things in the air when their branches go out.
Yeah, laurel oaks tend to be a little bit more straight. They don't keep their lower branches as much. They get to be about the same size. It's a little difficult to tell them apart because when laurel oaks only live around here to be about 60 to 80 years old in an urban area. Okay, again, live oaks can live to be very, very old. So live oaks get to be gnarly. Okay, when they get old like me, and they get gnarly, and by that time laurel oaks have already died and passed away.
Is there a tree that you would tell people that you see they're planting? You know, maybe you've driven around Tampa or Sarasota, or you've looked at people planting trees that you could say that tree is going to snap in hurricane. That tree is going to grow tall, but then snap because it can't stand the wind. What trees should we avoid? Is what I'm getting at.
Sure, and so rather than pin one tree down, and there are some. As was mentioned, Mary Doria and her colleagues studied 150 different trees, 10 different hurricane events, and they really looked at all this stuff, and they created a beautiful documents for us. We have better information about that in Florida than any other place in the world, and it's specific to us. So what I would say is, and this goes right back to what was suggested, that the city of Tampa, and again, I can't help it, they do lovely things. The city of Tampa, along with the University of Florida, created the City of Tampa Tree Matrix. The City of Tampa Tree Matrix is about 110 trees. It evaluates all the different aspects of habitat for these trees. So in other words, you can see whether you're planting the tree in the right place or not. One of those categories for the city of Tampa, of course, is resistance to wind, and that resistance to wind is based upon Mary Duryea's research. And you can get this online simply by going to the City of Tampa Natural Resources section of the Planning Department, and it's right there. And you can get it.
But just a quick question. Jacarandas, do they snap?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Let's go to Dan in Tampa, who's got a question. Dan, what's your question for our guests, Wendell and Robert?
Trees. I like trees. Trees are cool. I live about a half mile from the station. We got trees around here. During the hurricane, all the power outages were because of trees falling on the power lines or the poles. The only death was over some guy trying to chop up a tree after the hurricane. Just a few blocks from me, it was such a big tree, it creamed out a house, and we didn't even have a storm. If we had gotten the brunt of the last hurricane with 100-120-mile-an-hour winds, we would have had power outages comparable to what Puerto Rico had. Don't you think maybe we ought to go and take down the canopy of all these old trees before the next hurricane does it for us?
All right, Robert, that's a very provocative question. Dan wants to take down the tree canopy.
Well, Dan, I think that there's a more knowledgeable way to do that. Again, we can take a look at the condition of trees. We can take a look at certain species, as was mentioned earlier, that are more susceptible to damage from hurricanes, and work from it from there. We have the knowledge, the information, if you will, necessary to make good judgments. We're simply not doing that all the time. And as a matter of fact, you know, after the 2004 hurricane, and I was hurricane season, which was really bad, I was going to mention, because Tanya and I were talking earlier about the fact that hurricane season actually took down a lot of the trees that were really susceptible to hurricanes.
Yeah.
And a lot of the ones that are left are the ones that are most resistant. And so we want to be careful about what we take down. But you make a good point, though, and I want to reiterate it, about the person getting hurt cutting the tree up. This is no joke. The second most dangerous occupation in the United States, according to the insurance companies, who have the best statisticians in the whole country, you can bet. We all know, right? Is a tree cutter. And the most dangerous situation for a tree cutter to be in is when trees have fallen down and they're laying over one another, and there's a lot of pent up energy in terms of tension in branches and things. And no way anybody thinks that they should go out there with a chainsaw and start cutting up trees after a big storm. We found after the 2004 hurricane season that the most of the hospital admissions from people being hurt from hurricanes came after the hurricanes, when people were trying to actually clean up and they were using chainsaws and problems.
And Wendell, do you want to add to anything? I mean, Dan's saying that we should cut down the canopy. What would you say back, Wendell, to Dan?
Well, I guess it's not a simple answer, but I guess also I think, well, maybe especially in urban areas, maybe we should go with underground utilities so those poles aren't exposed.
They do that in North Tampa, or New Tampa. There's a lot of underground utilities, and there's some things that are in play with that as well, because with ground shifting, you know, there's going to be issues either way, as far as utilities go. But, I mean, like one of our, like we were talking about before, is the trees offer some protection, too, with the hurricanes. But what, Rob, what sort of things can you suggest that people do to take care of their trees before the hurricanes hit in order to kind of protect you into the season so you don't have a bunch of cleanup to do after?
Well, I think, first off, we need to recognize that and say out loud that people need trees.
Yes.
We need them. We need them. And even engineers today will begin to tell you that we need the green infrastructure, the trees of the cities, to manage the health and welfare of people. So that said, the other thing we need to say is, like as John said earlier, trees can cause damage. They can be dangerous. But when we're talking about risk and understanding risk, it's a whole lot more risky to get in your car and get on I-4 than it is to any tree anywhere, okay? And we do that every single day. So we need to kind of put this into some kind of perspective. So, Tanya, sorry, to answer your question directly, obviously I don't do that all the time.
The other thing we need to say is
All right, Dan, we're going to cut you off. Dan, thanks a lot. Thanks for the call. All right.
So You know, so what we need to do is to recognize that trees are very, very large. We have placed them in the environment in which they have not developed for 370 million years. And so we need to manage them and manage them properly. And the way to do that for somebody who's a homeowner is to hire somebody who actually is a professional at doing it. And that's the International Society of America's program to certify arborists, which are colic, you know, can talk about much, much better than I can. But, you know, you wouldn't try to redo your entire electrical system in your house. You know, you need to get somebody out to manage your trees. It doesn't have to be all the time, but periodically going out, looking for dead wood, looking for cracks, right? Looking for fungus that might be causing root damage. If you're building around your house, keep in mind that the root system is what you really need to protect. And so you just can't have people tearing up the root system of your tree and thinking that you're still going to have a stable tree. But certified arborists,
do that right now before the hurricane hits.
Yeah. Yes, right. Yes. Do it, and don't hire Chuck with a truck.
Okay. Let's go to Sarah in St. Petersburg who has a question. Sarah, you're on. We're talking about trees and trying to prevent damage from our trees from hurricanes.
Well, I was wondering, I just had to take down, sadly, an 80-inch in diameter live oak because it was diseased. And my new house that I just bought, I'm 16 blocks from downtown St. Pete, and it's a 100-plus-year-old neighborhood, so I know this tree was old. Now I have to replace it, and I don't mind doing that, but another caller or another expert said about root-bound trees. What's a good tree? And it has to be a Florida native shade tree. What is one that's going to withstand the hurricanes now and grow and provide shade where I've now lost the whole side of my house of shade?
That would depend upon how much room you have. Okay.
Well, I could move the tree to the front of the house. It's very close. I mean, my lot is only 50 feet wide, and the co-dominant 40-inch limb that hung over my lot went all the way over to my other neighbor's property. So I don't have a lot on that side, but on the front of the house, there's plenty of space.
Well, you know what's a really underutilized tree that is really excellent in terms of wind resistance? And it's not so easy to get, but you can get it if you look for it. Get a sand live oak.
A sand live oak.
They consider it a different species now. You know, the scientists, they play games with that and back and forth. Sometimes they say it's not. Sometimes they say it is. But a sand live oak, okay? A sand live oak is a diminutive cousin of the big live oak, okay? But it has all the same physical strength characteristics of the larger tree. And so it is very resistant to wind. It does get large enough to give you shade. It won't be huge, but it will be taller than your house unless you've got an apartment building. They're beautiful trees to use, and we need to use them more in the cities, really, as we find ourselves with less space, you know, for trees and things like that. So, yeah, sand live oak.
So the roots won't grow under. See, with the other house, with the other tree, I couldn't cut one limb because then the tree would fall the other way in a hurricane and lift my house up its pier and foundation. So how about the root structure? Is it going to grow wide or is it a deeper, like a deep-rooted tree?
Okay, so first off, there are no deep-rooted trees here. Okay, all the roots in the trees around here exist within about 18 inches of the surface of the ground.
Wow. There
is a tree called a longleaf pine, which initially puts down a deep root when it's a little seedling, but as it gets bigger, that atrophies and it gets shallow rooted too. So they're all fairly shallow rooted around here for lots of reasons that we really don't want to get into. What I'd suggest to you, truly, first off, that would be, you know, that would be my first recommendation. But I'm not there with you, right? I'm not looking at your house. I'm not looking at where everything is.
Well, swing on by.
Well, but again, the city of Tampa has this wonderful tree matrix that you can get on their planning department site, okay? And it's going to tell you all that stuff, how wide it gets, how tall it gets, whether it grows slow or fast, you know. It's going to give you all that. It's going to tell you whether it's wind resistant. It's going to give you all that information. It's just a beautiful document, really, and it's the best way to get started. And the last thing I would tell anybody who wants to plant a tree, especially if you're going to do it in your yard, is don't buy a big one in a big pot. Okay, we grow trees in this state in containers, and that's because we have to some degree, but I would suggest to you, buy as small a tree as you possibly can. As small as you possibly can, okay?
They're requiring at least 8 feet, so...
Okay, all right, well, that's as small as you can, okay?
Okay.
And buy that tree, and in Florida, we have grades and standards for nursery stock. So when you go buy the tree and ask for a Florida number one.
Florida number one, sand live oak.
Sand live oak. If you can get one 8 feet tall, you know, do that. And when you plant it, okay, either do it yourself.
Somebody's coming to do that.
Yeah, somebody's going to do that for you. Well, then let me tell you, if you spend the money to buy a nice tree, okay, spend twice that much money to get it planted. Get somebody out there who knows what they're doing, because that's where these trees die a lot, is people plant them too deeply, or they take them out of the pots, out of the containers, and don't look for circling roots or anything, and they just shove it in the ground.
Doesn't the city of Tampa also have a tree menders program where if you're planning on planting it in the front yard, I think that the city arborist will come and go to your site and actually provide you with a tree and plant it for you. And I think that they have a list of natives.
They
do you know if they do that in St. Pete. I'm in downtown St. Pete.
Oh, in St. Petersburg. Okay, sorry.
Yeah, but I'll go check the...
Yeah, call the city.
Matrix for sure.
Look at the matrix and consider the fact that you're going to plant this tree. You want, you know, it's going to be there longer than us, right?
Yeah.
Right. So you know, spend a few bucks, get a good tree, get somebody out there who really knows how to plant trees properly.
All right, Sarah. Thanks a lot.
Great. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Robert. When you say Florida number one, what does that mean? Florida number one.
Sure. Well, the state of Florida has grades and standards for nursery stock. And they have, the standards go from cull, which is not good, to a number two, to a number one, to a fancy. It's very difficult to find the fancies. That's the nicest of all. What they're looking at is the relationship between the above ground part of the tree with the root system. That's one of the things. The other thing is they're looking at the way the branches are attached to the main trunk. We're looking for one main trunk, and with the branches going off in a manner in which they're not opposite each other. When it's possible, right? And we're looking for a lack of damage to the tree itself, okay? A lack of scarring, right? And when there is pruning, that the pruning, or they're not big pruning cuts, that it's been obvious that the tree has been pruned as it grew from little to bigger. So then, that's it.
And when I buy a tree, where would I find that number? Is that required of all trees that are sold?
No, and it's not always that easy to find, really. And those numbers are not out there sticking out. Okay, what you can do, and I do want to say this right now because I think it's important for folks that are listening. You can get all this information and understand this better by just simply going on your computer to whatever search engine you have, typing in University of Florida trees and hurricanes. Okay, that's the web search. University of Florida, trees and hurricanes will take you to all of the information that we produced back in 2004 and 2005. And everything we've talked about and much, much more is sitting out there for you to have.
Ron of West Tampa writes, as a certified arborist, I would say kudos to Mr. Rob Northrup for his knowledge and advice. I've had the pleasure of learning from him firsthand, and I'd also say to tell all the folks who want good tree care, always look for an ISA certified arborist for all your tree care needs. That's Ron in West Tampa. Let's go back to the phones. You're listening to a live program on WMNF, the Sustainable Living Program. We're talking about how to look for the best tree to plant and how to prevent damage in a windstorm and a hurricane from your trees. Let's go to Joe in Pinellas County. Joe, you're on. What's your question?
Thank you. This has been a most interesting show, and it comes right to the heart of my own personal situation. I have what I call a water oak, although it might be a laurel, I'm not sure, but we always call them water oaks. It sits on the south elevation of my house. The tree is about 44, 45 years old, and it's gorgeous. It shades the entire south elevation of my home. Recently, within the last couple of weeks, at about the 8-foot high level from ground up, where a large limb had been, and had been cut off about 20 years ago now, and that all that healing and stuff, I noticed something that looked like sawdust, kind of, and it turned out to be kind of like a mud. And all of a sudden there, I was confronted with about a half a dozen termites. And at first, because of their look and what I ran to the computer, and they looked like they would be very similar to the Formosan termites that scared the Jesus out of me. But point is, apparently my oak tree, this thing that I love and cherish, has termites. And my question is this something that can be cured? Or am I just going to be able to just, over a period of however much longer, am I going to watch my beautiful tree die? That's my question. Are you still there?
Yeah, sure.
We were... Sorry about that. I had the microphone off, and obviously I am not a regular MNF announcer here. This is Rob Northrup. So
did you hear my question?
I sure did. I did hear everything. Thank you, sir.
And the last part of that question is, if there's something that can be done, if you would repeat that qualification for the type of arborist that I could contact.
Sure, absolutely. Well, let me give you that first, okay? Because that's kind of important. They're called certified arborists. Certified arborists.
Uh-huh.
And it's and the initials of their professional organization is ISA.
ISA,
as an International Society of Arboriculture. And if you're ever looking to find one, you can simply go to your search engine on your computer, and you can type in Florida ISA.
Okay.
And that's their website. And if you can't get, you can find it. They have wonderful ways of finding arborists. You can put in your zip code. You can put in your town. They'll tell you who's working around you. Okay.
Okay. Okay. Well, the thing that disappointed me was that I called the city of St. Pete where I live. And, of course, you know, they have arborists, okay? But it turns out that even though they're part of my tax bill, they don't do anything for residents, if you will, nor would even answer any questions. So, and I'm glad to hear your show, but please go ahead. I don't mean to interrupt.
No, that's okay. So let's assume that what you've got is a water oak. The water oaks, and you're right, water oaks and laurel oaks have a lot in common. They only live for maybe 50 to 70 years in our urban areas. And there's a particular reason for that. And that is because when they get wounded, when there are breaks, they become susceptible to fungal infections. Okay, unlike live oaks. Live oaks are not as susceptible to fungal infections, but also when live oaks get wounded, they have a tremendous ability to actually physically and chemically wall off the wound. So that's why live oaks live for 300 years and laurel oaks and water oaks live for 50 or 70 years. So you got a water oak. So let me tell you a common scenario, not that it should take the place of you having a certified arborist come out and take a look and see this on the ground. What you're describing to me is an infestation of what's called ambrosia beetles. They're very small, boring beetles that bore in through the bark, into the just right inside the bark, and they create canals where they lay their eggs and they raise their young. Okay.
Okay, may I interrupt here?
Yeah.
These critters, number one, were all pure white with large heads, and about the ones that met me, if you will, at the entrance area right there, were probably about a half an inch long.
Well, this might have been a different kind of beetle again. Again, this is difficult to do, you know, without being there, which is part of the reason why it really would be beneficial for you to actually get a certified arborist out and see it.
And I'm going to, but my main question is, regardless of whatever kind of critter it is, it's probably destroying my tree. Is something like this curable?
No.
No. Okay. All right. Okay.
What would he do then? Should he plant another tree there in order to, like, kind of see for the future of losing that tree? Or should he, like, what is his steps if that's near his house?
What's being described here is some type of boring insect.
Yes, sir.
Okay? And these boring insects are native. And so they're everywhere, and you don't see them in all the trees. And the reason for that is that if a tree is healthy and vigorous, the little insect generally can't get in the tree. Okay, so that means that this tree is already stressed and is losing vigor.
Okay,
and generally speaking, with laurel oaks and water oaks, that begins with a fungal infection of the roots.
Okay,
and it clogs the vessels that move water up into the canopy. Reduces the vigor. These little insects begin to bore in. The first thing that they come to when they get through the bark into that outer edge of what we consider to be the wood are some of these vessels that have water in it. If that water pressure is reduced, they can get in there and they can function. And they dig tunnels. That's what that... It is sawdust. That's exactly what it is. It's just very fine sawdust, and they're kicking it back out as they're digging these tunnels. As they dig those tunnels, they are continuing to sever those vessels that move the water. At some point, and usually it happens fairly quickly, within a month, the canopy will just die because it no longer gets the water.
All right, Joe. Thanks a lot. Good luck too. All right. Yeah. So we're down. We're down to the last 2 minutes or so of the show. Rob Northrup, let me just ask you again. You're putting on a seminar about this very topic at the Garden Club on Bayshore Boulevard in Tampa next week. What's the date and what's the time?
Yes, the date is a week from Wednesday, July 25th. And that's the Bayshore Boulevard, Tampa Federation of Garden Clubs, 2629 Bayshore. The time is at 10 o'clock in the morning, and it will go on until about 12 noon.
All right. Rob Northrup is with the County Extension Service, IFAS. And Wendell Martinkovic, what would you add? How can people get in touch with you? You tree hugger, you?
Well, I'd like to add that a place that both Sarah and the second caller could get them actually buy the trees. If you go to the Florida Association of Native Nurseries, their website, which is FANN, F-A-N-N, that's a good place to actually buy that stand live oak tree. And I know there's probably some nurseries there in Pinellas County and Hillsborough County. And the other thing I just wanted to mention was that the Native Plant Show is coming to Bradenton on October 18th and 19th. And it's a little bit far away. Hopefully we'll do a program on that, but there will be a very good trade show at the Bradenton Area Convention Center, and it'll be the 6th annual Native Plant Show. It's the first time it's been held in the Tampa Bay area, so I'd really like to promote that because I know that growing, planting, and promoting native plants is very good for sustainable landscapes.
All right, Wendell Martinkovic, thanks a lot. We've heard from Rob Northrup. Tanya Vidovic has been here. Tanya, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
And John Butts. John, thank you.
Thank you, Rob.
So, John, we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Yep.
All right. Back. And if you want to talk to our guest, Rob Northrup, who's in the studio after the show, you can call our main number, which is 813-238-8001. Thanks to Frank Knox. He's been the phone producer today. This is WMNF, Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota. I'm gonna be
I'm gonna reach for the sky.